from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, everyone. My name's Alon.
And my name is Rich.
There he is, on a second mic.
I'm moving mic. I'm going to move back in a second.
That's fine. All right, so this is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. We're on for another week, as I hope to be for a long, long time. And unfortunately, Ara's not with us this week because he's off on some trip. I think he's in California.
None of these headsets work.
It's all right, man. You don't really need it because you can hear my voice. So we talk about video games and the video game industry here on Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And before we really start, I want to mention about what we're doing at PAX. I've talked about this the last couple of weeks, but apparently I wasn't clear because I've been getting a lot of emails lately about either being a contestant on the Chatterbox Treasure Box, which we declared we would not be doing this year. Also, just how to be in or what sort of questions I'm looking for Family Feud, because I had requested in previous episodes that we get some question submissions for Family Feud. I realized, though, we didn't really discuss what Family Feud is, and it's a very old game, right, Rich?
Who doesn't know what Family Feud is?
Well, not everybody had the Game Show Network growing up, I guess.
Dude, how young are these people? I know what Family Feud is.
Yeah, but you watch a lot of television.
Dude, everybody alive should know what Family Feud is.
All right. Well, to summarize it for anyone who's not familiar with it, and will be at PAX. Actually, I don't really care if you'll be at PAX, but I want to hear your questions. So the way Family Feud works is they get two families on stage or two groups of people, and they ask some sort of question where the same question had been posed to a large group of people prior to the game ever happening, basically just getting survey results.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, do you like the color red? It's more like, name an object you find in a kitchen, right? And someone might say a cutting board, a knife, a refrigerator, a housewife, or whatever, right? and so a simple question like that is posed. Now, I think last year we had a question like, name a female game character, right? And so people mentioned Princess and Samus and whoever they wanted to mention.
Eris.
There's always some weirdos who try to come up with the most obscure answer possible.
Oh, what was the
one
we got? That was just ridiculous. It was something random.
We got lots of fantastic answers, but unfortunately, the ones that are the real one-offs, we end up not using because we have to throw away the singles. Because anyway, the whole point is you get points based on, you know, if you can't get the answer that everyone else mentioned, mm-hmm. you get the most common answer. So anyway, come up with a video game-related question that would be suitable for Family Feud, such as name a female video game character, or, you know, a big video game company or something, but try not to have such lame questions as those, because, well, we used one and the other was dumb.
So like something like, name an item that you would find in a Zelda game.
Also possible.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Something like that. I just thought of that. I'm awesome.
Well, keep writing more down, because I still need some submissions. We're probably going to have about five
questions.
Somebody
email us that question.
All right. Yeah, email those to Alon at chatterboxgameshow.com. The link's on the website. You can also, well, the website is chatterboxgameshow.com. Of course, you can join in our live chat if you're listening live as well. Okay, so the main topic that I want to discuss, I'm not sure if Ara is actually going to call in. He might have more to talk about. But for the last couple weeks, I've been suggesting that I want to cover a very potentially expansive topic, right? And maybe we could be more concise with it. I'm not really sure if I want to be. Basically, I just want to try to put in a little smooth envelope for everybody. What makes games good? By using examples of games that we've all seen in the past, we all recognize. Like, find some really good gaming elements out of specific games. So you might have a crappy game that has a really good element in it, or a game that is just really fantastic, and then we need to recognize what made it fantastic. And I think Mario is, to me at least, the most classic example of a game series that does things right, and does it right in many, many different ways. And that's because, well, probably because the people involved with it, like Miyamoto, are so devoted to their craft, right? They think about a lot more than just the money they're going to make and, you know, some new technology that's out. Like, I was asking Rich before we started, like, what, name a game that's good, right? That we could use as an example. And
what
he
did
said,
I say?
You said anything made by id, and used Doom as an example.
Oh, yeah.
Now, at the time, I'm willing to concede that Doom was something very new, and newness is something I put up there as a great element, because I personally am always looking for something that's new and refreshing, so to speak. So like this week I played a lot of Braid, and Braid is absolutely phenomenal. If you have interest in gaming at all and you like new ideas and you like puzzles, if you don't get Braid, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Why haven't I played it yet?
That's really your problem, right? You've got an Xbox.
Yeah. 360. It's been sitting in my living room.
Yeah, it's a live arcade game. It's $15. Some people are upset that it's a little bit too pricey, because it is a short game.
It's worth it.
But it is absolutely worth it. Yeah, actually, the lady of the house, she had seen a discussion from John Blow, the designer of Braid.
That's an awesome name, by the way.
Yeah, it is. So she saw a discussion by him, and he had mentioned Braid, but we're talking about the GDC from earlier this year, right? I was not at this discussion, so I missed it. I was off doing something else, probably a meeting with, you know, some little company making a game I'd never heard of. but anyway, she went, and she was talking with this guy. I don't remember his name, but his talk was awesome, and it totally changed her outlook. He's a really good speaker, and he's very, like, irreverent. He doesn't really care what other people say, and there's a lot of articles on Joystick right now that talk about, you know, his struggle to determine pricing and of the game, I mean, and you know, his dealing with Microsoft and wanting the demo to be longer than it was, and you can tell,
I saw about that.
You can tell within the game that he wanted to make it longer, because, like, after the first part where it says, "Hey, it's the end of the demo," right? It's not really the end. There's this little dude that comes out and speaks to you, right? Little dinosaur guy, and he says, "This is the end of you've played so much of the demo. Press whatever to unlock the full game, or, you know, press another button to keep playing." and that's not seen a lot. Like, usually it's only at the very end when you get that, "Hey, unlock it." And I felt a little bit pressured by it. I was like, "Actually, you're kind of a dick, dude. Like, I understand. You don't have to pressure me five times," because it happens over and over as you continue playing. Like, "Hey, do you want to buy the game? Do you want to buy the game? Do you want to buy the game?" And I got annoyed, but I realized it's probably just Microsoft saying you need to push harder to buy the game.
Like you wanted to wait till the very end to be like, "Okay, now you can buy it." But Microsoft's like, "No, you need to ask now."
I'm speculating. I don't know that really happened.
Yeah, I'm just saying it might be something like that.
He's definitely come out and said that he wanted to make it longer than it is. And it was actually longer than I expected when I first played it.
And didn't he want, like, just the game in general to be longer? Or he wanted to do more with it, and Microsoft kind of, I don't know.
I haven't read that.
I was reading something a couple days ago saying that Microsoft restricted him on some stuff.
Here's the thing. That game is absolutely fantastic, because it blows my mind. Like, every new world you play and every little new level, there's some new, I don't know how else to describe it other than to say, a new gameplay element. The game's all about manipulating time, and I know we've seen that before, like in Prince of Persia, okay, you can reverse time.
Like Blinks the Cat?
Yeah, I thought about that too. Like Blinks the Cat. And Blinks the Cat had some elements where you have to reverse time to succeed.
With like
whatever,
a vacuum cleaner or something like that?
Yeah. We don't have to talk about Blinks the Cat too much. But this game he describes it in his explanation of why it was, well, in the same interview where he discusses the price, he explained, "Listen, a lot of games come up with some significant hook, and you play a whole lot of that same thing over and over and over, or you have a lot of filler in your game just to get to the next interesting point." He says, "This game is a lot of interesting stuff with absolutely none of the filler in the middle. Every part you're playing is absolutely intentional, necessary, and interesting. And paying $15 and getting four hours of really phenomenal gameplay is just fantastic." And then to learn that there's even more super secret stuff in the game, and it absolutely blows your mind how to get those things. Like, I had to cheat on almost every single one of them. I think as long as I knew that there was one of the secret stars in a particular level, I think there were two of them where I was able to find where it was, or
just not how to get there.
Well, one of them I was like, "I bet it's here. I can sort of tell it's here by the way my character was reacting, but I'm not getting it." And so I had to watch a video that shows how to get them all. And I was like, "Yeah, I was absolutely right. I just have to try over and over and over and over and over," which is actually part of what this game is about. But in the way they handle it, the way he designed the game, means you can do it over and over and it doesn't bother you. And I'll discuss that a little bit more when we get back from the break.
Listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
So this is actually funny. Right during the break, I got a text message from a friend of mine who I've been talking to about grades this past week. Like, hey, do you know how to get that piece? Do you know how to get this one? Whatever. There were actually just two that I was stuck on at the end. He figured out one and told me about it, and then I figured out the other one. And
can I just say something random quick?
Feel free.
Speaking of text messaging, my friend has, he was here over the last week, the coolest ringtone for a text message. Every time he gets a text message, his phone just goes, Sega. And I'm like, what was that sound? And he's like, oh, it's my text message on my phone. I'm like, that is awesome. There we go.
Okay. Very interesting. So anyway, he just happened to text me at this moment to say, hey, I just got the star on level 4-7. That was crazy. I don't even remember which level 4-7 is, right? I have to go look at something.
It's 4-7.
Very nice. Thank you.
It's the one with the things in the floor.
Anyway, so before we went to break, what was I saying? I was talking about...
Something about Braid being the most amazing game ever created and your mind blew up when you played it.
I was saying about how he makes repetition. That's what I was saying. He makes repetition all right. All right, so let's think about a game where you do something repeatedly and it gets really frustrating.
I was going to say every game you do the same thing repeatedly.
I'm going to use the original Mario Brothers as an example.
Ninja Gaiden?
Or the original Super Mario Brothers, because that's what's in my head right now. So basically any platform game where you've got to, you know, make it across a gap or do some particularly obtuse action, right, to keep going. You've got this bottleneck where you have to do something very specific, and it happens to be or require a whole lot of dexterity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you miss out on the rest of the game unless you can get past this one part. And that happens all the time. You've heard of people like friends playing a game that say, hey, dude, can you take care of this part for me? It's too hard, right? That's happened to you, and it's happened to me and everybody else. So
I'm always the person that has to do it for the friend, though.
Exactly. Well, me too. Although there might be a situation where
can
I hand it off
to you. Can you get the water temple on Zelda for me? And it's like a two-hour-long temple.
Yeah. Now, I mean, break that down to a smaller task,
like
right?
a single thing like people can't do.
Yeah. So you've got something really hard. And Braid does this, and it does it on purpose, but it takes care of it in such a fantastic way. Like I said, the game, it allows you to manipulate time. And the very first time you die in the game, you know immediately that you're not really dead because your guy falls to the bottom of the screen and it just puts an X on the screen. That's it. Like, it doesn't go to credits. It doesn't stop the game. I mean, it pauses, but it doesn't like take you out of the world. You press X and it just reverses time as seamlessly as it was moving forward. Now you're moving backwards and you just reverse what you were doing. And so he puts you into these situations where you have to do something that's very difficult. And I mean, not necessarily crazy hard, but the sort of thing that it takes trying over and over and over just to get it right. Right. Mm-hmm. First of all, you have to figure out how to do it, but then it takes several tries. And giving you this reversal, and that's available to you throughout the whole game with very small exception, being able to reverse time just at the touch of a button, all you do is press X and boom, it reverses. It allows you to do these hard things and just do them as much as you want without having to redo anything. Although,
there's no limitation to how many times you can reverse time.
No, you can reverse all the way to the beginning of the level. What you can't do is, like, each level is separated by a doorway, right?
Yeah.
You go in a door, and so
you can't
that starts time.
Through a door.
Yeah. I mean, it starts time when you start in the door, and you can't obviously move forward in time. But, you know,
you haven't done it yet.
Well, if you reverse time, then you can scrub forward up until the time when you started reversing.
Gotcha.
Because that time hasn't started.
Because it's already happened.
Yeah. So anyway, it's great because he presents you with these very difficult puzzles that are fantastic, but they would be horribly frustrating in any normal game that didn't allow you to just reverse.
Because you'd have to start over and then get to that spot and then die again.
Well, exactly.
Imagine
falling down a cliff that is so very high that it's impossible to get back up. And just to get to that point took maybe a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get a particular piece to cross that gap without falling down, you have to try over and over and over or time
it
perfectly.
Like, it's like one of those levels where it's a platformer where you're like, you have to go up the level. And then, but you can still fall back down. So, like, you get through this whole thing and then you fall back down to, like, the bottom of the level again. And you have to go through, like, 5 minutes of getting back up to the top. I don't know a specific game, but I know I've had that happen to me before.
Yeah. it definitely happens in a lot of games, and it's frustrating. So this removes a lot of that frustration. It's still there because he presents you with a hard challenge.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's no challenge that... I mean, it's so hard that you're not going to get it. What's hard is figuring out the puzzle. The actual, the actual function, actually doing it is not as hard. But certainly that's coming from, you know, my perspective. Whereas when my friend was playing, she wasn't able to do something. Just like, here, just you play. I want to watch because I can't move the joysticks well enough. But
yeah,
you know, we've discussed how girls can't handle a control stick.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Soundbite that. So anyway, I don't want to stick on Braid all night, but it is fantastic, and I'm intentionally not talking about it too much so that
we'll
Rich can
talk
play
about it
and
next
be happy.
Week, and R and I will have played it and talk about it.
Yeah, I don't want to give anything more away, but the Secret Stars are absolutely amazing. Getting them all, mm-hmm. I would just stuff I'd never think of, and he did a fantastic job of introducing the player to these crazy new ideas. And I compare it to everyone who asks me, "Well, what's Braid?" I say, you know how Portal was really awesome because it made you think in a new way about space, basically,
yeah.
And how to move. This is new and incredible in the same way, but instead of bending space, you bend time. And he presents all these puzzles that are, you know, require the manipulation of time. It's just incredible. So I'll leave it at that, and then you can talk about what you like about the game next week. I don't know why I haven't played it yet. I'm pretty sure that's criminal.
I've been busy with other stuff, and like my brother moved in, and so like Braid wasn't on the top of my list, unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure you played some Rock Band.
I did, because I was playing with my friends that were in town.
All right.
So that was more important than a single-player game.
So some of the elements that make Braid awesome are the fact that it's got these very new...
Super-duper sauce.
But it's got new ideas that you don't normally think about. Things that are only possible in a video game, for one. And they're puzzles that... break your concept of traditional puzzles, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's very new. And like I said earlier, newness is very necessary for me to be interested in a game. Now, what's troubling is you might have something like Portal or like Braid in the future, and I'd say, okay, it's not that great. It's been done over and over. So it's kind of hard to repeat that process. That's what is true creativity. That's what makes, you know, a great designer of any content is presenting something new, whether it's a video game or a movie or... whatever. Doing something new is great. It's what keeps the porn industry moving. It's newness. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a little off topic. So, at the very beginning of the discussion, I said I thought Mario was probably the greatest example of a good game or a good series. And one of the things it does very well is generate new gameplay elements or new mechanics over and over and over. So, by that, I mean, several times within a single game, you have these things that you've never done before. And then if you look at it on more of a macro level, each game does these or presents these new options, new mm-hmm. gameplay options that are different than prior. I mean, you'll have some repetition, obviously, and that's what keeps the series a series, because it's got, you know, turtles with shells, and oftentimes you can fly or whatever, jump and all that stuff. That's mm-hmm. all standard stuff. But each game has... very new gameplay.
They add something to it every time.
Not even listen. They change a lot of things. Like the water pack is only in there one time.
Yeah.
And Mario Galaxy has a lot of sphere stuff going on.
I didn't like the water pack. I thought Flood was cool.
That's true. I'm pretty sure the reason they added the water pack was to get over the hurdle of difficult control in Mario 64. Right.
They added Flood because it could talk to you, and it was awesome.
Now, so you remember in Super Mario 64, the biggest complaint was the camera, and moving around in a 3D world, you weren't always able to, like, if you were trying to jump onto a certain block, you couldn't, because it was really kind of hard to conceptualize the 3D world and see where you were.
Yeah, some of those were kind of hard to hit the right blocks.
I have a feeling
that was part of the awesomeness of Super Mario 64.
Well, I'm willing to bet you that the designers, when they were thinking of the new game... and at that time, Super Mario Sunshine,
yep.
decided, how can we get over the one biggest frustration in Super Mario 64?
Yep.
It's 3D, it's difficult to maneuver, we need to make that easier for people while still making it interesting.
Yeah.
Adding the water pack gives you the hover ability, which, you know, they knew about from Mario 2 with the princess, right? So hover ability made it a lot easier to maneuver in that difficult to maneuver virtual 3D world.
Yep.
So I would... bet some money that was why they added the water pack, to make it a little bit easier. And you'll notice they did the same thing in Super Mario Galaxy. And by the same thing, I just mean they eliminated the frustration that existed in Super Mario 64 by playing with gravity in different ways.
Yeah.
Where you're not going to fall off the sphere because you're on the sphere. You're just
yeah.
on a different part of it.
Yep.
I don't even remember all the game. There must be some place where you could fall and die. But it's not common. And so they got over that problem. By saying, well, or just changing how the core gameplay worked, how the core control worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that if we see another Mario game and it's in 3D, you're going to have some element in it that doesn't reintroduce the frustration of Super Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the other things I want to talk about what Mario does, is basically dynamic difficulty, but naturally. It's a hard one to explain. Basically having multiple paths so you can choose which way you want to play the game. Anyway, we've got another break, so we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one.
Woo-hoo! All right, we're back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I haven't mentioned our fantastic sponsor, the University of Advancing Technology. You can go over to uat.edu to learn more about what they have to offer in terms of becoming a game developer or designer or artist. Or I guess they have a bunch of other stuff too. But
artificial just about life programming.
Yeah. You listen to the commercial.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hackers, they're everywhere.
I'm going to try and mention a little bit more about Mario and then take Scott. He's on the phone. So I was talking about how Mario games have this, what I referred to as dynamic difficulty. I really don't think it's a good description. But what I mean is there's, in most of the games, of course, you're going to have bottlenecks in a lot of games where you have to complete a certain level or you have to go through a certain part of the environment or something. But they all do a great job of, well, with the exception of the, well, even the very first one, actually. Super Mario Brothers does this as well, where you can just skip whole worlds because they're too hard or you don't want to play them or whatever. Just like a lot of games, including some Mario games, let you beat a specific level in one of multiple ways. Mario 64 is a great example of this, where, I mean, there's certainly some levels you have to play, like the first one. You have to play it and get a star in a certain way.
Yep.
But after that, you can play around on the level and choose to get whichever star you want to get, whether it's the one that is actually, you know, titled the level, because every time you play, the title of that star changes, right?
Yep.
But you can still go ahead and get the other one if you want. And again, there's sometimes that you only have the option to get two of the six stars or whatever, but there's multiple ways to do it. Certainly in 3D, you have more option to go around enemies rather than beat them in a certain way. A lot of the 2D games back in the day, if you came across an enemy, you had to kill him or fight him in some way, whether it meant just avoiding the hammer he was throwing or something, right? Whereas in the 3D games, you can just walk around him. So there's a lot of decision on the part of the player, how much difficulty they want to present or deal with within the game. And Mario's done a great job of this historically. You can just, in 64, if you want to beat the game, you want to get to Bowser, you don't have to play every single level. You get as many stars as you need to get to the next part. And if you want to get to the next part, great. If you want to play it all, also great. And then beyond that, there's secrets, just like we were talking about in Braid, secret star things. There's secret ones that you don't have to get. They're not key to the game, but they add more to it.
Like Yoshi on the rooftop of the castle.
Like Yoshi on the rooftop. I never got 120 stars in Mario 64. Can you
believe
that? Are you
serious? I never did either. I have to be honest, I never got 120. My friend did it for all four files on his game. Like, he played through the game all four times. He didn't actually copy. He did it four times.
I went through it again, like, you know, years after playing it. I thought, I'm going to get 120 this time, and I only got 119. And when you get that far, you're like, I don't know which one I missed. And you don't have a guide in front of you because I'm not...
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I don't know which one I missed, and I don't want to go back, play through the whole thing to try and figure out which one I missed.
You can, like, go through and see which stars you have, don't you?
Well, obviously, those ones I got. And then there's one secret star that I...
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
And there's so many different ones, so...
You're
anyway,
just like, not worth it.
I never got the 120th star, and I never got the Yoshi, but I guess there's a way to get him without even getting all stars, by the way.
I don't know. It's awesome, though.
Yeah. So, the things that Mario does very well, obviously, it's got great audio and cutesy graphics, and it's got interesting environments. The storyline has already been always been fairly lame, but it presents...
You don't need a story.
Exactly. So it presents new and interesting gameplay elements, and there's two components to that. Within the same game, as you play through the game, and we'll just focus on a single game at this point, as you play through, you're consistently presented with new methods of play. It's not just, a platformer, do the same thing over and over. Within each individual Mario game, you have new elements of play. That doesn't hold so true with Super Mario Brothers. The first one was fairly standard through and through.
Yeah, but I mean, it did so much in comparison to what else was out at the time.
But yeah. Then you get into Mario 3. That's where it really broke new ground.
Mario 3 and then
Super Mario World and 64 and all of them. They just, once it moved into 3D, they could pretty much do whatever anything. They wanted.
Everything.
They make great use of that. The multiple, or maybe dynamics, not the right word, but the ability to essentially choose the level of difficulty that you want to deal with without having a difficulty meter.
There's openness to it to a certain degree where it's not too open. And like you can kind of choose, maybe Mario is really the first.
Pen 15 says it best, optional difficulty.
Optional difficulty?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's best, but it's still dumb.
He says it another way.
Yeah, which I like better than mine. Dynamic difficulty is something else that we've talked about in past shows.
Yeah.
So it does all those things, and it also has, which I think is instrumental to having a good game, or what I mean is you won't be able to have a good game without this, which is having good control. The first thing I do with any game when I pick it up, presuming it's a platform and not like a racing game, is just sit in whatever world I'm in and press pretty much every button on the controller in multiple ways, right? It says Mario can climb up trees. You present it in the very first level of Mario 64. You can climb trees. You can jump. You can double jump. You can backflip.
Triple
you can
jump.
Triple jump.
You can do the side jump where you flip over like a cartwheel jump. It's awesome. You can do so much in that game.
Exactly. There's so many different methods of control, and that has nothing to do with when when you're in a special part of the game, like sliding down with the penguin race, right?
Yeah.
That's obviously a little bit different, but it's unique to a specific level.
Uh-huh.
He always has a bunch of different things he can do. He can jump off of walls.
You can long jump.
Yeah. All these different things that you can do. And so I spend a good 2-3 minutes, depending on the game, just playing with the controls and seeing what my character can do. And if he can do a lot and it's hard to make him do those things, it sucks. If he can't do a lot, if all he can do is walk around, it's probably going to suck. You have to have all of those elements. He has to be able to do a lot of things or do at least more than just one thing, because otherwise the game's probably going to be limited to doing whatever he can do the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really create good game design if your character can't do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Braid is a great exception because your character can't do anything but jump.
Oh, yeah.
But
they do it in such a unique way where...
Yeah. And he can reverse time, which is what really introduces all of the other cool things that he can
mm-hmm.
do. So anyway, Mario is fantastic for all of those reasons. Great control, new gameplay elements, and the ability to basically decide how hard you want it to be. Portal and Braid, I kind of group them together, are great because they're just so new. They totally break your concept of what can be done in a game. I was playing Braid. I was like, I would have never, ever conceived of adding this into this game. And I'm struggling really hard talking to listeners, but I don't want to ruin it for them because it's only been out for a week, and I think everyone should go play it. Maybe next week we'll just say spoiler time and we'll talk about the cool elements
spoiler
of the game.
Spoiler lulls.
Yeah. If anybody had told me about the game in the beginning, I would have been really upset because it was very interesting to me learning about it for the first time.
Okay.
You had mentioned GoldenEye, and I'll let you talk about GoldenEye, but first we've had Scott waiting for like half an hour. So
Scott's up.
I figure we should get him on the air. Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Not that much, man, except Aura's not here, and I know you always enjoy talking to Aura.
it's because that's what's his job. A lot of things I talk about, I typically like talking about elements of the game design itself, and, well, he did it for a living, so it's kind of natural that he would be the more apt one.
Dude,
to
I'm
talk
just messing
to.
With you. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, beyond the point, when you're saying you can choose whatever star you got in Mario 64... That was actually one of the things that made me very, very disappointed about Galaxy. I actually dropped Galaxy somewhere around the mole boss. I said, I'm not playing it anymore.
Who's the mole boss?
Somewhere like Fifth World, I believe.
I don't know that I got that far.
I played through the whole game, but I'm not going to remember right now.
I only played like 3 hours of it, and those 3 hours were cool, but like, I don't know.
All right, so what was wrong with the mole boss? I don't understand what part you didn't like.
Oh, basically, the major source of fun for Mario 64 was usually like trying to get multiple stars in single life. Like, I used to go and grab the star I was aimed at. Then I go and try to grab the 8 red coin star, then the 100 coin star, maybe there are a couple stars. Not grab them, but try to do it all in the same life without actually leaving the level.
Oh,
see how many of them I can do at the same time. Things like that. And you can't do that with Galaxy. I mean, and the
that's your major complaint,
was,
that you can't get more than one star at a time?
No, it wasn't so much that, as much as it was they kind of manipulated the level depending on which star you got, which is a shame because it's more effort on their part, but...
I see what you're saying.
It's making it a bit less enjoyable.
It directs you in a way that you didn't want to be directed.
Yeah.
I could see that. And that actually upset me a little bit with playing, but not nearly enough to actually stop me from playing. Anyway, stay on the air, or stay on the line. We'll bring you back after the break. And we're back again. Before we get back to Scott, I'm going to remind everyone once again about University of Advancing Technology. Head over to uat.edu, learn more about what they offer. Rich?
These chairs are bouncy.
Oh, that's fantastic. You found a new game to play in the studio.
Up, down, up, down.
All right, let's bring Scott back. Scott, were you wanting to basically argue some of the points I've made today, or are you going to side with me so that I don't hang up on you?
No, just basically when I say that, I think the major, what it all boils down to, what makes a game good, is how much care the developer and publisher put into it. If you make, like, a really strong effort at your game, it doesn't really matter what type of game it will be, some size niche will enjoy it. If you have enough time to polish your controls and things like that, because even complexity in controls doesn't really matter that much, because Team Fortress 2 is basically just running and jumping. Some characters have double jump. That was not its goal. Its goal was to have multiple classes. And
there's shooting involved in Team Fortress as well.
Don't forget that key element.
Yeah, shooting, yeah, sorry. you're shooting portals as well in Portal. No, but yeah, it's all about how much effort someone puts into the game. There's going to be some niche somewhere. There's not going to be any game for everyone.
I don't know, man. I think there's a clean argument that you need more than effort. You need output. And, I mean, really the only thing that's necessary is to convince me that your game is good. So you can put a lot of effort in, but if you don't satisfy me, I don't really care that much.
well, you may not be their niche, right?
Well, I mean, if they can satisfy some people, great. But when I'm talking about what makes a game good, I'm trying to discuss the key elements that I think are necessary for really making a standout game.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain times when a lot of these things might be less necessary. Like if you're being a strict puzzle game, like with blocks and bubbles and stuff, you might be free from some of these rules. But for the most part, these apply to pretty much everything. Like even control in a puzzle game is
control
key.
Is, I think it's the first thing you need in a game is control. If you don't have good control in a game, the game's not going to be fun, because if you as a player don't feel in control of what's happening on the screen, you're not going to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me of a story, actually. I was playing there was this rip-off version of Bomberman that was made of Java. They didn't actually move you in accordance to the grid, so you can half move through the hex. They had to go and line up properly how to go. Like, if you're going left and right, you want to go up and down. You had to line up just right, as you can actually make it in the quarter to go up. So as you're running away from bombs, you could try to press up and, oh, nope, you're not a quarter right. You have to go and move for like 3-5 seconds to get around that corner.
There you go. Perfect example. Perfect example of bad control. I say even the real Bomberman has bad control in it.
Depends which version. I think some versions had really good controls.
The ones that I've played, some of the earlier ones.
Have you played the Bomberman 64?
There's more than one Bomberman 64.
Well, like the first one, not the Adventureland, whatever.
I think so, but it's a long time ago.
Because that had some good four-player action going on that game.
All right. Right. We have very little time left. So I see what you're saying. They definitely have to put care in. A lot of times games are rushed, or the developer doesn't care very much because they're just told by their publisher, you need to make this. So I see what you're saying. But I don't necessarily agree, because they still really seem to screw it up, even if they care. I'm just speaking in generalities. Oftentimes people screw it up. And that's why I...
Example?
Just lots of games.
Okay.
Right? The team behind... What's that game that Acclaim made that tried to be like Mario back in the day of the 64? I can't remember.
What?
Well, you're just saying that right there. Vex. They tried to be like Mario. It wasn't actually they cared about the game themselves. They tried to be like Mario.
Well, no, they... That doesn't really matter.
Wasn't There's Vex on the GameCube?
It was on a lot of things.
And it had like the two and the PS2?
Yeah, I think it was starting to be developed on the 64 and then came out on the
GameCube. Oh, well then that just doomed it right there.
Whatever. And it came out on everything, man.
Okay. It was bad,
right.
Though.
Anyway, we've got Penn on the line, too, and I want to get to him before the
Penn.
End of the show.
See you guys.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
All right, so let's bring Penn on. We've got, like 3 minutes left before the end of the show. We didn't get to talk about
Penn,
GoldenEye.
Penn, hurry up enough. Quick, go.
Bring up GoldenEye, that way Rich will feel better.
Talk about GoldenEye.
Perfect Dark is actually better.
Dude, it's basically the same thing. Perfect Dark is just like an update to GoldenEye with different characters. It's
an update that makes everything better. So.
Oh, I totally agree. But GoldenEye was just the first thing leading to Perfect Dark.
What about that Perfect Dark on the 360?
Dude, that game was terrible.
Actually, the second to last level, it was actually a lot of fun. But
you have to pay for 10 hours to get there?
Well, whoever designed that part of the game obviously knew what they were doing, but the rest of the game was, terrible.
Dude, I played the first 2 hours of Perfect Dark 360 with a friend. Oh, it was horrible. We were just playing, yeah, Perfect Dark, this is awesome. And we played for, 2 hours, and we're like, man, we really need to put on a different game. This is boring. It was bad.
Well, things that I think make a game look good, play well, or make them fun, is I like it when they take something that people say won't work and make it work. Like, for example, everyone's talking about if Resident Evil 5 had a sort of more fluid control, it would stop being scary, which I then begin screaming at the internet because fear worked.
Wait, people are saying that if Resident Evil had good controls, it wouldn't be scary?
Yeah, if you had the ability to shoot and move, people are like, if you can shoot and move, then it wouldn't be scary. And I was like, well...
If you can shoot and move, then the game's actually playable.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've been saying. But people go, well, it's not scary because you need to be limited in how well it controls. And I always go, but
no.
Fear worked. Fear was totally scary, and yet it was one of the best controlling shooters I've ever played, even on the 360.
I liked Fear.
Yeah, and it still managed to scare you without being, a clunky mess.
Yeah, I think...
That's what actually makes me not want to play Resident Evil games, is the control is no good.
Yeah, the controls are terrible with Resident Evil games. What's scary, what makes a good something scary is, A, not knowing what's going to be around the next corner. Just the idea, hearing things but not knowing what's going to be there. Or, stuff just popping out of nowhere when you least expect it, even when you expect it and you're kind of like, I know there might be something there, but there might not be, and it's just really creepy. In Fear, we're just like, oh, I need to climb down this ladder, and then the head turns, and then there's this girl in creepy dress kind of thing, and you're like, oh crap, and then you're like, oh, it's gone, and then you're like, oh, and then you feel safe again, and then you go down the next hallway, and you're like, she's back, and now I'm locked in the hallway. It's awesome.
I did not play enough of Fear, apparently.
Penn knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know, when you climb down the ladder, it totally freaks you out.
What's particularly scary is what people say about games when they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Like saying that bad control
bad
is important to the game.
Bad control makes the game so good.
And also, I personally love having to learn things in games. So, for example, in Ninja Gaiden and fighting games in general, you have to learn how to play, and that to me is always exciting. So I was on Bobby Blackwell's show yelling about Street Fighter 4 that you shouldn't be excited about a game that plays like a 15-year-old title because you're not learning anything new. You're already doing what you already know, which for some people that's comforting. But for me, like a game like Soul Calibur, I like that my characters have changed and I have to relearn how to use them because it makes it exciting to see if it's better or if it's worse or if there's new things that you can achieve thanks to the changes that they made.
Yeah, well, you have to recognize the difference between you and other people. So I have a feeling you're more
me equals smart? Is that what you mean?
Exactly. I was going to say, you're more in the category of intelligent person who likes to learn, right? So I'm that way, R is that way. I think Rich has a little bit of that in him somewhere.
There always has to be something new in a game.
That's what made Guitar Hero
like,
so great.
Like, I mean, obviously there's always comfort in playing the same game, and obviously you're going to buy a sequel to a game because it's similar. But like, if Mario Galaxy had nothing changed from Mario 64, people would hate it. If it was just the same exact game with absolutely nothing added to it or nothing changed.
Well, then it would be called Super Mario 64, right?
Exactly. So Street Fighter 4 is the exact controls of Street Fighter 2?
It's not exactly the same.
Well, I'm saying if it's almost exactly the same control-wise.
It's intentionally sort of like a throwback to Street Fighter 2.
Well, then just release Street Fighter 2 in high definition.
Well, that's basically what they're doing. Anyway, thanks for calling, Fan. I appreciate it. Too bad we're at the end of the show. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Don't forget to submit questions to me for Family Feud at chatterboxgameshow.com. You can link to me. And if you're going to be at PAX, let me know. I'm thinking about putting together like a reserved row of just chatterboxers up in the front so that they can cheer and be excited. So email me if you're a chatterboxer and are going to be at PAX, then maybe I'll get you a special seat. And that's about it. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.